Ricardo Montero had made no effort to climb the teak tree where Sean had left him. He simply leaned against the trunk and closed his eyes. The pain in his head came upon him as suddenly as the blow of an axe, and it blinded him, filling his vision with bursting stars of light. But through the pain he heard the old bull elephant squeal, and the sound filled him with remorse and bitter despair. He let the Rigby slip from his hands and fall into the leafy trash at his feet, and he reached out his empty hands and staggered blindly to meet the elephant, wanting in some desperate way to placate and make recompense to the great beast, calling to it, "I mean you no harm. We are brothers." And ahead of him the bush crackled and burst open, and Tukutila bore down on him like a collapsing cliff of granite. Sean raced back to where he had left Ricardo, ducking under branches and bounding over obstacles in his path, and he heard the terrifying rush of the bull and the voice of the man just ahead of him. "Here!" he screamed. "Here, Tukutila! Come! Come this way!" trying to pull the elephant off Ricardo and onto himself, but he knew it was of no avail. Tukutila had fixed on his victim, and nothing would deter him. He would carry his charge through to the death. The centre of Ricardo's vision cleared, and he looked through an aperture in his head that was surrounded by shooting white lights and Catherine wheels of spinning fire. He saw Tukutila's vast grey head burst out of the green forest wall above him, and the long, stained tusks come over him like the cross-ties of a roof about to fall. In that moment the elephant came to embody all the thousands of animals and birds that Ricardo had slaughtered in his lifetime as a hunter. He had a confused notion that the tusks and long trunk poised above him were the symbols of some semi-religious benediction that would absolve him and redeem the blood that he had spilled and all the life he had destroyed. He reached up both hands to them joyfully and thankfully, and he remembered a phrase from his early religious instruction. "Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned," he cried. Sean saw the bull's head rear out of the thicket ahead of them. It was facing almost directly away from him, with ears cocked and rolled along the top edge. He heard Ricardo's voice, though he couldn't understand the words, and he realized that Ricardo must be almost directly beneath the bull's outthrust tusks and reaching trunk. Sean plunged from his headlong run to a dead stop in a single pace and threw up the .577 express rifle. It was the most difficult angle for the brain shot, with the elephant angled away from him and the bulk of its shoulder covering the spinal column. The target was no bigger than a ripe apple, and there was no indication of where exactly it lay buried in the huge bony casket of the skull. He had to trust his experience and his instinct. For a moment it seemed, as he looked over the open express sights of the rifle, that he could see into the skull, where the brain seemed to glow in the bony depths like a firefly. Without conscious effort, his trigger finger tightened as the pip of the foresight covered that glowing spot. The bullet bored through the sponge of bone as though it were air. It cleaved the old bull's brain, and he felt nothing. His passage from full enraged life to death was a fleeting instant, and his legs collapsed and folded under him. He dropped on his chest with an impact that jarred the earth and shook loose the dead leaves from the branches above him. A cloud of pale dust swirled around his massive carcass, and his head dropped forward. His right tusk drove into Ricardo Montero's body, entering his belly a hand's breadth below the sternum of his rib cage, and it passed through him at the level of his kidneys, and came out through his spine, just at the point where it merged with his pelvis. The shaft of ivory which Ricardo had coveted and risked both fortune and life to obtain now pinned him to the earth, skewered him as cleanly as a whaler's harpoon. He looked down at the tusk in surprise. There was no pain, no sensation in his lower body, which was twisted up under the bull's coiled trunk. No pain, even in his head. For a moment his vision was clear and bright as though everything he looked at was lit by brilliant floodlights. And then it began to fade, and darkness closed in upon him. Just before the darkness engulfed him completely, he saw Sean Courtney's face floating before him, and heard his voice fading as though he were sinking away into an abyss. "Capo! Capo!" it echoed in his ears. And Ricardo Montero made a huge effort and said, "She loves you. Look after my little girl." And then the darkness swallowed him, and he saw and heard nothing more ever again. Sean's first impulse was to free Ricardo Montero's body. He tugged at the tusk, which impaled him, but it was so thick that he couldn't get a fair grip upon it, and Ricardo's blood was oozing from the terrible wound. It coated Sean's hands so that he left sticky red prints upon the ivory as he strained at it. And then he realized the futility of his efforts and stepped back. The full weight of Tukutila's huge head and body was resting on those tusks. After piercing Ricardo's torso, the ivory point had gone on to bury itself deep in the soft sandy earth. It would take half a day's work to free the body. In death, the man and the beast were locked together, and suddenly Sean realized how appropriate that was. He would leave them like that. First Matatu and then Pumula appeared from out of the forest and stood beside Sean, staring in awe at the grim spectacle. "Go," Sean ordered. "Wait for me at the canoe."
"The ivory?"
Pumula asked diffidently.
"Go,"
Sean repeated, and at the tone of his voice they crept quietly away. Ricardo's eyes were wide open. Sean closed them with a gentle stroke of his thumb, and then unknotted the cotton scarf from around Ricardo's neck and bound up his jaw to prevent it sagging into an expression of idiocy. Even in death, Ricardo Montero was still a handsome man. Sean leaned against the elephant's head and studied Ricardo's face. "It happened at just the right time, Capo, before the disease turned you into a vegetable, while you still had most of your zest and vigour. And it was a fitting end for a man like you. I'm glad you didn't die between soiled sheets. I only pray that I will be as fortunate." Sean laid his hand upon one of the tusks and stroked it. It had the texture of precious jade beneath his fingertips. "We leave them for you, Capo," he said. "These tusks will be your headstone. God knows you paid for them in full." Sean straightened up and followed Ricardo's tracks back into the forest until he found the rigby lying in the dead leaves. He brought it back and placed it in the crook of Ricardo's right arm. "A warrior should be buried with his weapons," he murmured. But there was still something missing. He couldn't go and leave Ricardo like this. He could not leave him lying exposed to an uncaring sky. He must cover him decently. Then Sean remembered the legend of this elephant and how he disposed of the dead. He drew the heavy knife from the sheath on his belt and turned to the nearest green bush. He slashed off a leafy branch and covered Ricardo's face with it. "Yes," he murmured. "That's right, that's proper." Working swiftly, he hacked down the branches and covered Ricardo's corpse and the head of the old bull under a mound of green leaves. At last he stood back and picked up the .577. He tucked it under his arm and he was ready to leave.
"No regrets, Capo," he said. "For you it was a good life, right to the very end. Go in peace, old friend."
He turned away and went down to where the canoe was moored. The reeds scraped softly along the hull of the canoe as Pumula poled it along. None of them spoke. Sean sat amidships, hunched forward with his chin in the cup of one hand. He felt numbed, emptied of all emotion except sadness. It was like coming back from a raid in the days of the Bush War, with every man silent and sad. He looked at his right hand in his lap and saw the little half-moons of dark red under his fingernails. Capo's blood, he thought, and trailed his hand over the side of the canoe, letting the warm swamp waters wash away the stain. He let the hunt replay itself through his mind, as though it were a silent recording. He saw it all again very vividly, from their first sighting of the old bull to the moment that he rushed forward to find Ricardo Montero impaled beneath a huge grey head. Then, for the first time, he heard sound. Ricardo's voice echoed in his head, faint and breathless, fading away. "She loves you," he had said, and the rest trailed away unintelligibly. "She loves you." The meaningless words of a dying man, the wanderings of a diseased brain. Ricardo could have been harking back to any one of the hundreds of women who had filled his life. Sean lifted his hand out of the water. It was clean, the blood washed away. "She loves you." He could have been trying to tell Sean of one particular woman. Sean looked up from his wet hand and stared ahead. Her memory had been with him these last few days, always there in the recesses of his conscience, yet coming to the fore at unexpected moments. Often while thinking of the great elephant, he had suddenly smiled at something she'd said. This morning, during the final stages of the hunt, he had reached outboard from the canoe and picked the bloom of a water lily. He had held it to his face and smelled the perfume, felt the silky touch of the petals on his lips, and thought of Claudia Montero. Now he stared ahead, and for the first time admitted to himself how much he looked forward to seeing her again. It seemed that she was all that could cancel out his grief for her father. He thought about the sound of her voice and the way she held her head when she was about to challenge him. He smiled at the bright specks of anger he could so readily kindle in her eyes, and the way she pursed her lips when she was trying to prevent herself laughing at one of his own digs. He thought about the way she walked, and the way she felt when he had carried her in his arms, and he remembered the texture of her skin, like the petals of the water lily, when he touched her under pretext of helping or guiding her. "We are absolutely and completely wrong for each other," he smiled, and the melancholy of a few moments previously loosened its grip. If Capo was talking about her, then he had definitely gone completely round the bend. But his anticipation was honed to a sharper edge. He looked up at the sky. The sun had set. It would be dark in a short while. Even as he watched, Venus, the evening star, appeared with a miraculous suddenness and twinkled low down in the west. One after another, the fixed stars followed her entrance, popping through the darkening canopy of night in strict order of their magnitude. Sean looked up at the stars, and he thought of Claudia, and he wondered why she evoked such contrary feelings in him. He compared her to some of the other women he had known, and realized how shallow and fleeting those experiences had been. Even his marriage had been inconsequential, a wild impulse based on simple-minded lust. It had been swiftly consummated, satiated, and terminated, a disastrous mistake which he had never repeated. He could only vaguely remember what the woman who had been his wife looked like now. He thought about Claudia, and realized with a small shock that her image was so clear in his mind that he could almost count the individual lashes around those big, honey-brown eyes, and the tiny laughter lines at the corners of her mouth. Suddenly, he very much wanted to be with her again. And as he acknowledged that fact, he began to worry.